Welcome, everyone. Today we're here, and I've invited Mike Wixon to be with me today. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much.
So this is podcast three. We started off and we did the annual report for the federal government, and we went through revenues, then we did expenses. And today we're going to talk a little bit about deficit and GDP. But you know what? I was coming in, and I just wanted to start off. I was coming in, and I read a report. I haven't dug into it yet, but it's very interesting. And it reminded me of the Arrive Scan podcast that we did.
The misappropriation?
Yeah. Of $60 million, right? 19 going to those two gentlemen. And, you know, I'm driving in, and the Women's Entrepreneurship Fund was what they were talking about, right? And apparently it was supposed to go to a startup organizations that are that the lady startup.
Okay.
And quite frankly, they didn't do that. They actually gave it to existing companies. And it kind of hit home for me, because being an entrepreneur and knowing how hard it is to lift a company, I'm thinking to myself, why did we spend $130 million on this and not have parameters of a program figured out? So, you know, I'm going to get back to it today, but I really wanted to jump into it right away with you.
Yeah, $130 million just thrown to the wind, if that's what has occurred here, that's just symptomatic.
Yeah, it's symptomatic. And quite frankly, when you're running a $61 billion deficit, and that's what we did do in 2024, you know, 130 million counts. And so, you know, whether it be the Green Slush Fund, whether it be the Entrepreneurship Fund, whether it be Arrive Scan, quite frankly, those are the challenges. And so what I wanted to do is, you know, I brought it up. It really bothered me when I was coming in. So let's kick it off, and I look forward to having a good show.
Paul, before the show, and by the way, this has got to be the most prepped I've ever been for a show, because this is disturbing. And before the show, you and I went around asking the crew and everyone in the lobby downstairs what the federal government spend in fiscal 2024 was. And guess what? No one knew what the expenditures were. In fact, and I can imagine, because the crew here in the building, they're savvy. And the demographics are pretty wide, so we've got a wide range of people here, a wide array of people here. They probably know more than the ministers what's going on a day-to-day basis. Why are we not hearing from our government? It's their job. Why are all of them not talking about it more? I find it ridiculous how Canadians and their government, all conservatives, liberals, NDP, and Bloc, just do not know what the numbers are. Nobody seems to understand what the numbers are in this fiscal spend. Canadians are mostly conservative when it comes to spending. I think that's the truth.
Oh, yeah.
And at the federal level, I don't need to know. It's totally bizarre. No, take us through why we don't have a better understanding of this. To me, it just seems ridiculous that as Canadians, we don't have an understanding immediately of what our debt is and what our spending levels are.
Oh, yeah. No, it is crazy. You know, and I laugh because what you're asking me to do is slam my fellow Canadians and whatever party they represent. But you know what? It's a mess. Let's be candid, you know, and the deficit's grown and grown. And it's bizarre that the population doesn't know why. So, you know, we get knocked around the world for being fairly frugal, right? You know, you go down to Florida and you watch a bunch of people walking on the beach, and all the Americans are making fun of Canadians and how bad tippers we are and everything else. So, you know what? You think to yourself, okay, well then how the heck do we not pay attention to our finances for our country? Because I know we pay attention to ourselves and our businesses. So, you know, let me recap a little, because I think this is really key for your, you know, this discussion. I spent two podcasts and I went through the revenues, the federal revenues for 2024. And what I did is I took a look at the annual reports of the federal government, 2024 versus 2019. I wanted to kind of get myself clear of COVID because COVID is a big blip in the radar, right? We spent $327 billion on COVID. So that contributed a lot to the net deficit or debt of the country. So I wanted to get clear of that. And I wanted to look at what we were doing before and what we're doing after. I really wanted to take a look and see why we didn't return to post-pandemic numbers.
Yeah, we never seemed to adjust back to that.
We never did, right? And so, you know what, is the question I was asking, you know, when we were going around asking people in the building and outside the building and friends, you know, how much did the federal government spend? They spent $521 billion. So that's the expenditure. So $500 billion we spend on an annual basis. And I broke that down in the two shows, you know, and quite frankly, the biggest expenditure in that amount is government. So government's biggest client is government now. And that's where most of the money goes from a federal perspective. We only made $459 billion.
So the deficit on that was a 61 billion dollars.
Right. Which, you know, I know you're saying, okay, this seems like a lot. But, you know, it is a lot because we increased our deficit from 2019 to 2024 by $47 billion, almost $48 billion. We went up 343%.
So that in that time, the deficit grew to over $600 billion?
Yes.
In that short time span?
The net debt grew $609 billion. So from the beginning of the, let's call it the Trudeau era,
right?
We actually grew from 2015-16 to 2024 by $609 billion. So which doubled our debt for the country. We're now at $1.2 trillion.
Incredible.
And we're projecting, and which we'll talk about more as we go through, we're now projecting on keeping that pace. So, you know, the statements by the existing government, you know, the prime minister, were that in the next 4 years, he anticipated having deficits about $250 billion.
There's 343 electoral seats, and politicians, in essence, there are board of directors here in Canada, are they not?
Mm-hmm.
In a minority government, we should be having a look from that board. They should have an eye on all of this. This is not a weird thing to talk about, given that it's their job. What else would they be primarily focused on right now if it wasn't that we owe so much money, we have such a debt, we're overspending? Why aren't our politicians screaming about this?
Well, you know, it's a number of reasons, I believe. Truthfully, a lot of it's out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at, you know, the major expenditures that the federal government makes, it's transfers, the biggest couple of the biggest categories, one being major transfers to people, right? So these are the ones we kind of say, okay, seniors, kids,
okay.
EI, you know, and these just keep going up. So quite frankly, they just keep going and going and going. You know, like I was shocked, to tell you the truth, when I look at 2019 to 2024, that our seniors, our elder benefits, went up by 42% and went up by $22 billion. When in fact, the number of people in that category that had gone into the age, the number of people that turned 65, yeah, was only 5% more.
Oh, so that was going to be my question. Are we aging population at that 5%? Significant, but it felt like, wow, we really hit an age bump suddenly.
No, we didn't. So part of it was age. Part of it was, you know, those baby boomers entering the category. But we gave ourselves a raise, a significant indexing that went across those 5 years that contributed to that increase.
Right.
Right? So, you know what? I get it. It's a big population. And quite frankly, it's going to, at some point in the next few years, make up 25% of our population. And it's a big voting block. I get it.
Oh, well, for sure.
Yeah. So I understand why it was done. But again, you know, these are all the things that came through. Then there's the other one that was just blew my mind, right, which was contributions or transfers to other levels of government, which is pretty much healthcare. When I tore it apart, it was $100 billion, right? So Transfers to people makes up about $120 billion. Transfers to other levels of government makes up $100 billion, right? So now you got $220 billion out of $521 billion, right? And those are primarily healthcare. So when you look, when you rip apart that category, you see pretty much all just healthcare expenditures. And that's another show, I know, but you know, that has all kinds of challenges that we continually see and we continually are going through in Canada. So then we get to, which is my favorite one, which is direct program expenses, right? So, and there's $140 billion in that, which is government. It's just crown corporations, government.
That's us assigning personnel, money to.
Yep. Yeah.
And contracts.
And we grew that $42 billion since 2019 through COVID. Never went back to any normalized amount. And then there's all these what I call slush fund programs, which is a myriad of distributions to other crown agencies. You know, there's some First Nations payments. There's all kinds of things in there. There's, quite frankly, probably our program that I talked about today for the entrepreneurial program for women is in there. So those are all the things that are in there. Our slush funds, our green slush funds, all those things are in there. So quite, you know.
Paul, don't these budgets have to be voted on in some way? I mean, don't we have any oversight at the you know, I guess we're looking to our politicians locally to have a voice on this stuff. How come we don't?
No. Well, you know what? The way our parliament works, quite frankly, is, you know, you get majority and then the budget passes, right? So, you know, it goes. But, you know, over the last few years and coming, you know, through the Trudeau period, coalitions started forming, right? So the NDP and the Liberals would form something. They would pass a budget. You know, it became a little bit of a free-for-all, quite frankly. You know, what happened was people would say, okay, I'll vote for your budget if I get, you know, the $38 billion or $10 billion dental care for, you know, low-income individuals in society. So, you know, they formed agreements and they kind of circumvented the whole system, right?
So there's no efficiency in that. There's only compromise with the same amount or more dollars.
You're brokering your own deals. So it's a deal brokering mechanism. And I get politics. I'm not naive. I've been around it my whole life. But you know what? When you start brokering your future away, then you have to ask yourself, what am I doing, right? You know, am I trying to figure out individual programs over other individual programs? And, you know, that's kind of the death knell for democracy, right? When you can increase your program benefits because your spending is increasing on a certain category, that is the elimination of the democratic process. And that's the scary part in this when you go through it, because not only are we growing to such a large deficit amount or debt amount, you know, we're also creating factions within government that can keep doing it. And there is no way to stop it unless there's a failure, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
It's very interesting that the process just feeds itself. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of continuing debt.
Yeah, but we weren't always, you know, Mike, and this is kind of when I dug into it, it was really interesting. Because, you know, I took a look at some of the prime ministers in the past, right? And, you know, and I know I've kind of harped on the Trudeau area, but, you know, John Chrétien, if you remember back, you know, 1994, you know, John Chrétien, wonderful prime minister, ran a very low debt campaign and then handed it off to Paul Martin, who actually did the same, right? And then we were lucky enough, you know, to have Stephen Harper, and up until the mortgage meltdown in 2008, when the economy got all rocky and bumpy from those subprime
debt mortgage.
Yeah. Those fake mortgages.
Nutty mortgages, yeah.
Yeah, so when the world went upside down, you know, he it's interesting, he was basically done when he increased his deficit, right?
Yeah.
So he hit a bumpy period, and, you know, in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think in California, you know, no politician should be able to outlast large deficits. And, you know, he, and even in his book, talked about it, that he knew he was done in California when 2008 came, because he took, you know, they blamed him and he went down for it. So, you know, you saw the same thing in the Harper area. And yeah. Then we get in now, and you know, we get going in the Trudeau era, and all of a sudden, you know, we got debts rising. We're it becomes normal, and the crazy thing is, it becomes normal to talk about the billions.
Well,
right?
That's what I was going to say. You just explained to me, we had two different governments, two different parties, follow the same trajectory for a period of time, and then suddenly the real estate market and the banks caused a problem that we have never returned from.
No, we never. So we get through 2008, we get the Trudeau group, you know, the government to come in, and off we go again. So, you know, we're 33, 24. So the debt amounts on an annual basis don't go below $10 billion. So we all of a sudden go from a period where we're talking kind of in the low billions to the low millions or high millions, to a period where anything over $10 billion is unachievable from a deficit perspective. And it normalizes. We, for some reason, we all say, okay, that's fine. And that's pre-COVID. So that's pre-COVID that somehow we got okay with running these massive deficit amounts because, quite frankly, we never ran, and it was, I went back and checked, and this was an interesting research exercise for me. Had we ever run any balanced budget legislation? So had anyone ever come and said, you know, like debt ceilings in the U.S.?
We need to have a parameter in place. Mm-hmm. It's never been suggested.
Provinces, right? You know, Ralph Klein, remember the Ralph Klein days when he came and did it? There are some provinces have looked at it, done it. Municipalities, for the most part, are just a hot mess, quite frankly, that the federal government and the provincial government help
out.
And
the provinces just keep downloading more and more to the municipal level.
The hotter the mess they are, the more money they give them. I don't know why. But anyways, that has become the norm. And so, you know, balanced budget legislation just never seemed to be part of our lexicon, and we never wanted it to be, which, again, as you go through this, it kind of taints our history because we keep cratering into this massive, massive hole. You know, and I think as we go along, we got to look at the federal government. We got to say, okay, like, where are we getting this money? Do you know where we get this money for the deficits, Mike?
Apparently, we just invent it. Because when you just told me what our overall deficit is as a country, that number was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. And that we keep adding to it at this rate. Then, just to be clear, the number that we talked about does not even include the provinces and the municipalities.
No, just the federal. We're just talking federal dollars. You know, that's a show we're going to do. We're going to do some shows coming up where we're going to, you know, take a look at the West Coast, the East Coast, Central Canada, and we're going to break down kind of what their budgets look like. But yeah, this is just the federal government.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay. So where does deficit spending come from?
So, you know, it's pretty basic, really. We borrow it or we print it.
Hmm.
So two things, right? And, you know, as we go through it, you know, you got to think through, you know, you mentioned about the provinces versus the feds. So I want to back up for a minute. You know, our founding fathers really created the federal government, you know, not to be the catch-all, to be the largest entity in government. The federal government was to control programs that every province would use, right? Healthcare, unemployment. So there was pensions, right? So there were things that they felt that the federal government should handle for economies of scale. It was an efficiency tool. So the sad part about it is it started off as a good idea, right? And the downloading or the provinces were given a lot of powers and rights so they could run their own economies, right? They could basically, and they do for the most part. Oh, they did for the most part up until post-COVID, where that kind of became very messy. Again, we're going to talk about it in other shows, but you know, that was the intent of our founding fathers, and you know, we just went in the wrong direction. We became a bloated entity on the federal side. We got okay with deficits, and here we are.
And the provinces, the provincial deficits seem to be ever growing. Mm-hmm. The federal government's forever bailing out programs on that front as well. Yeah, hot mess is a really good description. The federal government's grown out of control in the sense that your democracy erodes when they borrow more, they take more of your income, and they grow to be a department of the government, essentially.
Yeah, they became a business. They became the biggest business in their business.
They vote their own raises,
yes,
the benefits, and all their expenses, and we pay for all of it.
Yeah, well, you figure if your GDP is $3 trillion, right? So your GDP is just under $3 trillion. Your expenses are $500 billion for the government, right? You're the most powerful. You are the biggest spender entity in the country, right? So at that point, you have the most employees. You have the most infrastructure.
Right.
Yeah, so which was really not the intent, right? It was again, the intent of it was to create economies of scale by running programs across multiple provinces.
In your research, have you caught any sense of a kind of what population or what area of our population receives or versus who the biggest contributors are to the coffers here in Canada?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know what? I get that it's asked all the time, and it's really hard to figure out the numbers. But, you know, by looking at seniors, which we talked about, which mm-hmm. make up 25%, and we actually spend $76 billion on elder benefits a year, and then you take the government expenditures, as we talked about, which makes really, you know, you add healthcare in there, you're talking another $335, so healthcare and then the benefits and then the slush programs, you know, you're definitely over 50% of the people take more from the system than they give to the system for the total population of Canada. Like it's what the exact number is, I have no idea. We'd have to do more research on.
How is this sustainable?
Well, it isn't. It isn't sustainable, right? Because as we talked about before, in 2024 compared to 2019, the annual deficit bloated 343% up, right? So it went up $61 billion. You know, our deficit's $1.2 trillion from $685 billion. You know, a good example, right? And I only have, a soundbite from the news, is that it's a wake-up call, right? It's a wake-up call for all of us, that our interest payments are now $47 billion a year.
That's incredible.
We pay $47 billion, and that's basically up from $23 billion in 2019. So we doubled our interest payments in those years. And wow. That's got to be a wake-up call, because if you're a regular business, so think about yourself, right? You're going along, you're running your business, take your loan, you start taking more loans.
Right.
You're still getting income in, so you're still,
servicing.
You're charging your customers more.
Yeah.
You're finding new ways to grow, but you're not growing fast enough because your interest is growing. And in this case, it would be unsustainable. If you were running a business, you wouldn't make it. And now, quite frankly, with the announcement to keep at that pace, so if we're comfortable keeping at the $60 billion a year pace, it definitely isn't sustainable. And in the next 4 years, we're going to see even more if we decide to do military spending.
Yeah,
if
we actually committed 5% of GDP to that.
Yeah, exactly, right? If we jack up our military spending, where are we going to end up, right? We're going to end up $3 trillion. So if you do the math, right? So do the math with me for a minute. We're at $1.2 billion.
Yep.
10 years, we're roughly going to be running about 60 to 80 billion a year.
Per year.
So you're at $2 billion. Now you take 5% of GDP. So if GDP is $3 trillion right now, right? $3 trillion, 5%, that's $1.5 trillion, right? Or 150 million a year times 10, right?
Yeah.
So that's 1.5 trillion. So 1.5 trillion on 2 billion. You're
at
$3.5 trillion, right? And the interest, so you got to remember 50 billion in interest for every trillion,
wow.
Right? Is roughly. And that's if we stay at these low interest rates, because right now we're running a pretty low interest rate amount, right? So our interest rates are fairly low. So if we go up to the 50-year average, we'd go up to 5 or 6 or even 7% on interest rates. That means our interest rate would grow from 50 to 80 billion a year in interest payments every 1 trillion. So we could get to the point, quite frankly, if we get to 3 trillion with the defense spending, we'd get to $250 billion in interest every year. So which would definitely be unsustainable. It's not even.
So what happens? This out of control spending, where does that lead us in your mind over the 10-year period that you're talking about there?
Well, you know, we got out of control. So, you know, we talked about it earlier. Just going to step back for a minute. We came out of COVID, right? We spent $327 billion during COVID. So, you know, and you can argue, you know, we've talked about it on previous shows. Should we go back and should we take a look at that? We should.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we should, because quite frankly, there was a lot of things happen. You know, even today, the story we started the show about, you know, that's an offspring of COVID thinking, right?
Right.
You know, we gave an entrepreneurship fund to a group of people that didn't use it in the method we wanted it used, and follow the process.
And there was many other ones along the way, you know, the Arrive scam.
The Green Fund. So, you know, those are all things we should look at that happened during that period, and we're part of the $327 billion, and I think that's a good exercise to go through. Are we going to get any of it back?
No, I'm going to assume not, Paul.
No, we're not going to get it back. And we.
But to have an eye on what went wrong, and to at least as Canadians, maybe it'll refocus us on keeping accountability.
I think so. Well, and I honestly, Scott, all kidding aside, I think there's a whole show on probably the crime and the other part of this that we need to look at, quite frankly. And we need to figure out what we do with all these things when they happen, right? Because we can't, what we're finding as we come through the economics of this, we can't just turn a blind eye to it anymore. We can't just say it's okay, because it's not okay. Right? It's not okay that the money's going. It's not okay that we're spending it inappropriately, because it's going to cause the outcome of what's going to happen next.
Which, I guess, puts us financially, globally, not in an ideal position.
No, not at all. Cripes. So right now we're propping up you know what? Let me back up for a minute. You know, let's take an example of a country that did a similar thing to what we're doing. So, you know, our dollar, right, based on the amount of debt we're taking, will devalue and inflation will stay. But ultimately, the cost of borrowing will go up, right? So it's a vicious circle, as we talked about. You know, as our debt goes up, so does our interest. Therefore, it erodes our dollar value. It increases our interest. And then, right, our creditworthiness. So the challenge is, what happens is we borrow more to try to offset all these vicious deficits that we're actually putting up on the board and the debt increasing. We actually spiral into a similar situation as Greece. Remember Greece?
Oh, man.
Yeah. The devaluation. So what happens is eventually the bond market says, you know what, you're not credit worthy anymore. So I don't want to lend you money anymore. So I don't want to lend you money. And all of a sudden, the only avenue you have is
printing money,
right? But then that devalues your dollar.
Suddenly, so you're going to buy a loaf of bread with a garbage bag full of dollars.
Yeah, of course. And then all of a sudden, right? So now your costs are going, your inflation's going up. You're all your creditors, right? China, you know, the Middle East, everywhere is coming and saying, "Hey, I want repaid. Like, I want some money back," right?
Yeah.
You're looking not so stable anymore. So, and then your government programs are shut down. Remember, they shut all their
100%
their pensions, all those. Remember those? I don't know if you remember, but they took their pension plans, they shut them down, and they used to be, I think they started their pension programs at like 50. And so if you were 50 years old, you started on a government pension. They then had to jack them up to like 70.
I think we're 70 years old now, which was devastating to families that had planned their whole lives to be done at 50 and you know, incorporating that into their.
Yeah. So those are all the things, you know, and you have to keep in mind, like, we're not a robust GDP. So this is where, and you know, no one talks about it, but if we were kicking it on the GDP side, so if Canada was like doing like as well as the US, so the US per capita GDP is about 77,000, the Canadian GDP is only about 54,000, right? So we've been kind of lagging behind for years. I've written articles about that in our newspaper, and you know, we're 33% lower than the US on our GDP per cap, and it, based on the size of our nation and who we are and our resource-rich economy, that's unbelievable that we would be there right now. So how we actually, coming through COVID, saw such a reduction in our GDP is unfathomable for what we have resource-wise. So
this decrepitation of our nation financially, like how long do we have before we start seeing the effects of this?
Well, yeah, that's a hard question. You know, and I don't know how we've made it this far, quite frankly, when you look at the numbers. When you go and you peel through the numbers, you think to yourself, God, how's this still standing, right? Because it doesn't look so good. And we're propping up. We continue. We do a really good job as a nation to prop up our dollar. You know, we hustle out there. We pull debt, you know. We try to keep our inflation down. But our, like I mentioned, our productivity is really low. Our public projects are almost non-existent right now. We're gridlocked, whether it be pipelines, whether it be anything to do with, you know, minerals, whatever.
It's true. The government's stopping these projects that could be providing jobs, providing infrastructure that is cost-saving. You know, so what do we do? What do we do when the government actually, what happens if we actually invest in public projects and we start to have wealth in this country again? We're not deploying it and they decide to leave. You know, if people take their money out of this country, the wealth with our seniors, and they're all leaving with it, all these huge pension liabilities throughout the country that ultimately are, you know, moving off the books, do we find ourselves making our way back?
Well, that's the challenge, right? So we have a, you know, and it's a disgusting, you know, the U.S. talks about it quite a bit. We're not talking about it right now. We have a disgusting amount of wealth sitting with our baby boomer seniors right now, like disgusting. So the wealth transfer didn't happen. You know, it might happen, you know, but that's a bequest, you know, or people waiting for their loved ones to pass away and get inheritance. That's a long process, right? So a lot of what we have in Canada now is old money. Old money's getting smarter. They're moving it offshore, right? It's a high tax region. So you're seeing more and more, you know, people who are still healthy enough to move are moving. If they move with their assets, we don't send a very good financial indicator by even our CPP investing only 12% of the pension in the country and 47% in the U.S. So
that's a rough number to hear.
It is a rough number to hear. And you lose confidence, right? That gets you down a little bit when you hear, you know, and that's something that hasn't always been, right? You know, less than a decade ago, we spent, we invested 85% of our CPP in our own nation. So in the Harper days, most of the oil and gas investment was actually our own CPP investment. So somewhere along the way, we made the decision that it was a bad bet to do that. I think that's a bad decision. And I think we sent an indicator to a bunch of people who controlled the wealth in the country that, you know, they had to they'd look other places and find safe havens.
We can't make anything of it here. You know, our government can't make anything of it here. We should really be elsewhere with our money.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting. So we created, you know, again, we have these, and, you know, we're going to talk about it on other shows also, but, you know, we create these immigration schemes to bring people in, which I commend. You know, we're all immigrants at one point in time. But, you know, they're not going to replace the wealth that we're losing, quite frankly. That's not going to happen. Unemployment right now is at a high, about 7%. And we have, you know, what we've done is we've parked a bunch of our younger citizens at home. You know, our 20-year-olds are sitting at home feeling devalued. You know, we have a significant drug issue on the health side. And quite frankly, that's not making us productive. And that's the key to the economics of this. Like, we need to increase our productivity. We need the investment in Canada to start. And, you know, there's a few ways to do it.
Yeah,
but
tell me, okay, so you and I talked earlier, and you said, you know, there are some solutions probably
Sure.
That we're not looking at right now. What are those?
Sure. No, I think the government, listen, I commend them. You know, they're doing a few things that I think they're doing really well right now, and they're trying to do them. So they've woken up and they realized, you know, the people that are coming to the country aren't like the people in their 50s. They're not highly skilled. Like in the 50s, we brought in immigrants who, like my, parents and others and uncles and aunts. They brought in people who had skills, came from the old country, had skills, bricklayers, plumbers, plasterers. They knew what to do. So they're trying to get the people they're bringing to get up to speed and become skilled. I think that's really good. In order to increase your productivity, anyone you're bringing in the country now, you got to be training really, really hard. Like you got to get them into a program. You got to get them, because quite frankly, you can't increase your productivity in any manner without doing that, whether
that makes sense.
From computers to just basic trades. So I think that one they've realized, and I think they're hitting it. Print money. That's the only thing. With the fact that we've doubled our interest and our productivity is low, and quite frankly, we're not seeing a lot of growth on any other front from our revenue perspective, we need, as a country, to print some money, but the money we print has to go into productive projects. So here's the key.
So put it back into our own national projects.
Right, but we can't steal them. Like, so when I joke, you know, before, we can't do projects that are going to just go off to nowhere.
Right.
So, you know, it's not about pushing money somewhere and finding out that the money didn't go into the project. And, you know, we did a project, but when we did a value and assessment of the project, a money added value project audit, it had no value. The money went nowhere and we didn't produce anything. We cannot do that anymore. So when we talk at the opening of the show about, you know, projects that went nowhere, we really need to do value added projects. And they
programs. Projects and programs are two different things. And
yes,
what we really need is some massive national projects, you're saying.
We do.
With which to spend this printed money on.
Yeah. Well, and can I? I'm just two things. We need different levels of projects. So we don't need just large projects. We need small entrepreneurs, because there are people in the economy right now who are getting up there in age, right? Our pension programs have made them unemployable because people don't want to pick them up. Some of our laws are antiquated and make it difficult for people over a certain age to get picked up in the employment market.
Right.
So we need them working, right? So small entrepreneurs tend to actually bring them in for their experience. They're mm-hmm. really good value for them.
Good point.
Right? Whereas large corporations don't, right? So we need our public funds, so the money we print, to go at different levels, right? Some of it has to go to the small entrepreneur, but it has to go and it has to be working. So we have to be very diligent in making sure we just don't throw a bunch of money out there and the money gets spent on, you know, someone's slush fund for their retirement in Antigua.
Right.
Right? It has to actually come back to Canada, be used in Canada, employ people, buy materials that are built in Canada, and function, right?
Maybe a certain amount of accountability needs to be applied to that newly printed money.
Yes. Well, we have enough people. So quite frankly, we've created an infrastructure in government where we have enough people to watch it, right? It is our biggest...
True.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
So some of those people, quite frankly, can get those programs going and make them successful. They're good people. They want to work, right? They're just doing a job that they were paid to do and directed to do. So,
okay, what else do we do?
Return to pre-pandemic spending. You know, that's the big one. I harp on that all the time. We just got to go back and we got to say, okay, what were we spending? We weren't doing terrific before. We had a $14 billion deficit, you know, the year COVID started. We need to go back there, right? We need to get back to that, and we need to start doing all these crazy things. But and quite frankly, we need to focus on domestic policy, right? Like I know we want to travel. I get it. I say this on how many shows have I said this on? You're probably sick of this, but I go back. Right now in the world, thinking that anyone else in Germany, Poland, Italy, you know, China, Taiwan is going to dig us out of this hole, that's very naive. They're, you know, the U.S. is taking care of themselves. When you listen to the the debt crisis in the U.S. right now, the debt crisis in China, anywhere else, they have very similar circumstances to us. So we're not alone in this. We might say, oh, because we're smaller, it's a smaller number. But per capita, we're all kind of in the same, you know, not so great situation. So, you know, the key is we got to focus on our domestic growth.
Okay, so it begs the question, why aren't the legislators screaming and yelling to fix this all day long? It seems to be the core. Over $1 trillion, easily headed to $3 and beyond over the next decade without even trying, and yet the legislature is doing nothing about it.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
no.
They complain about it in bits and pieces, but as a framework of how we spend and how our deficit is mounting, yeah. Well, why aren't we hearing?
Well, you know, honestly, Mike, politicians do not lose for spending too much in elections,
that's
right?
That's true.
But your kids do.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, this is where you got to get a little bit excited. And I think people got to get really excited for their own well-being because, quite frankly, it's the future of their kids. Now, it's not just the future of their kids, right? So, and I keep saying this to, you know, siblings of mine right now. Right? I'm having this conversation with them. And, you know, they have great government pensions. They're in retirement, you know. And we were having the other day, I said, well, you know, and their comment to me is, well, this isn't going to impact me, right? So it's not going to have any impact on me. And I said, well, it might. Yeah.
It may. I mean, this is what I think. You raise a good point. I think that as citizens of Canada, we think very much today, a little bit from yesterday, and not at all about tomorrow when it comes to these things. Because we spend so much time trying to be popular with our vote among our friends and family instead of really focusing on what it is financially that's going wrong with this country.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just talked about, you know, we mentioned Greece, and I'm not trying to pick on Greece because I love Greece, beautiful country, and I love the people. But you know what? We talked about pensions, right, earlier on. And so, you know, out of all this, you know, as we rack up more debt and debt climbs, interest climbs, we have a instability in society. So it creates an instability. And people go, well, what's that instability, Paul? What? How does it impact me? Well, ultimately, pensions benefits would be not paid. So if it got really bad and they said, okay, I can't, the bond market came back and said, listen, you're not credit worthy. We're not going to take your bonds anymore. Then we'd start to print money. But people forget, like the bondholders aren't just going to say, hey, okay, that's fine, right?
We're good.
I'm not going to take any future, you know, bond. You know, I'm not going to lend you any more money. They're going to say, hey, you got a liability here, pal, and you got to at least pay the interest on it. So you better start shutting down those programs, whether it be pensions, EI, child support, all those great
major key players in our society,
all those ones that say transfers to people,
right?
Those ones are going to be shut down, you know, government, all that, all
back
gets retooled
back
to the budget. So we'll be forced, like that would be a forced event, which won't be fun. It'll be painful as hell. And you'd have to restructure all your debt. And what usually in countries like in Greece and everywhere else, other countries come in, they help them out. Now, you got to remember, that was in a time where everyone else was in a pretty good place. Mm-hmm. So I tell people that also. Like, when that happened,
the rest of the world was
pretty stable.
Fine, yeah.
Right? They weren't. So a lot of people could come in and help them and restructure their debt and keep the ball, you know, in the air, you know, bump the ball up. But, you know, that's not the case in this economy, right? In this ecosystem.
To go to a friendly nation for support is likely not going to happen.
Who would be the friendly nation? Yeah. So
now let me ask you this. I would assume that now we are planning and budgeting like crazy. Are we at the federal level?
No. No, of course not. We have no budget.
That was silly of me to think. Yeah.
We have no budget. You know, around Halloween, I think we're going to get a budget. So, you know.
I wonder how scary that will be. We'll certainly be shelling out on that day.
Yeah. But you know, the thing is, what does scare me a little bit, and you know, being a former accountant, so I look at it. You know, we haven't seen an annual report for 2025. We haven't seen a budget for going forward for 2026. So it, yeah, again, I kind of come back to my own, you know, business background. Would you run a business without a strategic plan that didn't take you out more than a year? Would you delay when you finished your fiscal year end? Would you not want to see how you did? And would you not want to use that information from the previous fiscal year to build your plan going forward? Of course you would, right?
So there, how can you have a budget without last year's results?
Yeah.
So obviously they must have last year's results because they're bragging that there's a budget on the way. Oh, almost right when they get back from summer break, which for some reason I think is in October this year.
Yeah, no, it seems like it. But you know, you would use that information to go through and look at all the contracts, adjust your costs, review your contracts, eliminate what you don't need from a domestic policy, make your cuts, and then try to get back towards something that was reasonable. That would be the rational thing to do. And that's where we're missing. We're missing that discipline in the system where we get back to doing that, right? We sort of got away. We hit COVID and we were in panic mode. You know, we've gone to tariffs. We said, okay, you know, we're kind of back in a little bit of panic mode again. Time out. Right. We got to get back to, you know, we finished the fiscal year end March 31st. For those of you who don't, someone asked me today, when's the year end of the government? March 31st. We finished the year end. OK, well, a normal company says within the end of their fiscal year end, within 60 or 90 days, they produce a set of financial statements. Right after that, they produce a budget. You know what I mean?
They produce a budget before
the year ends.
They present it at an annual general meeting.
Yes, exactly.
In this case, legislature, you know.
Yes. Yeah, we got to get back to there because, quite frankly, for predicting after the fact, which we did kind of through COVID and we continue to do, isn't good, right? It's not going to work. And that's kind of, I think, a hope and a prayer that we're going to cut a deal with someone else who are going to take us out of this. And I think that's more and more becoming a little bit of a pipe dream. So
I'm not sure the world even knows Canada exists so much. We miss a lot of photo ops lately where normally we would have been.
Yeah, we do, unfortunately. So, and you know, hopefully that'll get rectified soon. And I look forward to this conversation. I look forward, Mike, to when we get the 2025 annual plan, we sit down, and when we get the budget, we sit down. And I don't want to bet against the country. I love this country. I hope it does well. But you know, if we don't put the discipline back in the system, where are we going? So. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Paul.
And I appreciate it. So, and thank you for joining. And going forward, we're going to keep this up and we're going to keep talking about the budgets and the annual plans coming up. And so please, you know, tune in, subscribe, and we look forward to seeing you.
Also, go back and check out the previous two episodes on these financial matters of our government. They're very informative. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Mike.